now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey Jonesy, where the hell have you been?
Oh, I can't believe it's the season again. Only about 2 days ago, we were in our downtown Auckland studios with Jock McFrock on the Lions Tour. What happened to the summer? All the summer, there was no sun. It was all sunny when we were away. Now it's rugby season again. I can't believe it.
But it's nice to see Arthur again, isn't it?
Arthur had a magnificent innings on the cricket field yesterday.
We're going to talk about that later.
Okay, but it just goes to show, it's still the summer in my head, really.
Well, you're not ready to go yet?
No, I'm not ready to go at all.
Do you know the law changes?
I knew the old ones.
Okay, well...
But no, I do know the law changes, yeah.
Very good. And Adam's here as well. Adam, what have you been doing this summer?
Well, I was working very hard in Argentina, in mostly the sun, where I think Eddie Jones got what he wanted out of that tour.
Went on holiday with Eddie, did you?
I went on holiday with Eddie, yeah. We even had a beer together.
Hello and welcome back to The Ruck. We are back. This is Series 2. At the time we've been away, the New Zealand Black Ferns won a brilliant Women's World Cup. Johnny May jumped ship from Gloucester. South African teams joined what was the Pro 12. The Pro 12 doesn't exist anymore. And most topically, Alex Lowe literally hit the RFU for six. So this is an emotional band is back together type of podcast. I'm Owen Slott, reunited from the long Pinot Noir New Zealand nights with Steve Jones and Alex Lowe. And as you heard from New Zealand, Adam Hathaway. Known by some by his podcast handle, Dog Man. For the uninitiated, Adam is one of the rugby world's most illustrious greyhound owners. Maybe the top greyhound owner in rugby.
I should say I wouldn't be far off, but they're not running that well at the moment.
Why? No tips for the week.
Well, no. Maura has had more physio than Binnie Vunipola this summer, so she's. She's struggling, although Rascal did win last week.
Okay, so you tip Rascal ahead of Saracens at Bath, then, would you?
No, I think Saracens have got more chance than Rascal. He's up a grade this week.
Seriously, Adam, in Argentina, what struck you most about the New England team, the New England boys? There was a lot of very fresh faces who, when Eddie announced that squad, it was quite widely criticised, wasn't it? I think Eddie sort of came out ahead on quite a lot of those calls.
Yeah, there was a lot of sort of worry about people like Dan Robson not making it. However, I think in hindsight, he might have got it right. I think we slaughtered it on here, didn't we? In May when he announced it, but...
I remember there were some strong opinions voiced.
I mean, he gave caps to 11 new players, but what was quite striking was how the senior players carried it, really.
How many of those new players are going to kick on, do you think?
Well, Eddie reckons six. He's got six for the World Cup out of it.
Sorry, I'm terribly sorry. When you say, I think you've condemned the whole thing there, Jack. 11 new players capped. It was, if it's an international rugby tour, a top tier one team against another top tier one team, it is not something where you breed kids. And England missed a massive chance there. You can always bring the under 16s in another time. They missed a massive chance to give people who'd earned the right to have that England jersey the right to a tour and the right to a cap against a really poor side. And that was passed up. And I think he tore the heart out of the squad by not taking the next in line in every position.
So do you think that's it for people like Robson?
Well, of course not. I mean, you know, we're talking about a guy who scored four tries on Saturday. Mm. I mean, how embarrassing does that look that they didn't take him to Argentina? Eddie goes down highways and byways often very successfully, but that England tour to me I'm sorry, I mean, I'm sure the shot was enjoyable, but that England tour to me was just a complete waste of space.
I was with you before it started, Jonesy, but I think, as Adam says, he got a fair amount of out of it that he wanted, as in he identified some players who were further back in the queue he wouldn't have seen otherwise.
What about the people who weren't further back in the queue that you'd like to have seen? Would you not like to have seen Dan Robson to work with him at close quarters?
Well, I can't answer uniformly, because Robson was the guy at the time I said who was most hard done by, and his response on Saturday, as you said, four tries against Sale fairly proved his point that he could have done much more to do so. But Adam, so from that tour, you said they reckon they got six.
That's what he said. Obviously, he wouldn't name them. Just thinking of ones who shone. I mean, Mark Wilson was good. Underhill, they've obviously got their
own. The two young sevens, Underhill and Tom Curry.
Yeah. I mean, interestingly, Eddie did say he was going to leave Curry out of the second test, even if he hadn't been bashed up. They obviously like Underhill. He talked up Charlie Ewells at every turn, and Harry Williams as well.
Did he? I understand he really liked the Saracens, the young Saracens lock, Nick Ezekwe,
yeah, who actually came on for the last 2 minutes of the first test, called a line out to himself and won it. Which, well, I don't know what that says about the other line out callers who were on the pitch, but there you go. The 19-year-old's doing that.
Sorry, Jones is still shaking his head.
Totally. Look, the England jersey is for the best 15 or 23 players in the England team, not for the future, not for the World Cup, for this season. You take Don Armand, what must he feel? He's been the outstanding six in English rugby for 3 years, better than anyone who's played for England. Didn't even get a cooey from Eddie. I just think it's wrong.
Out in the clubs, there are players who are thinking that, as in, if I prove myself week in, week out, and I don't get noticed, what more do I have to do? But I would also say, if Eddie Jones is England, and like it or not, I don't think there's ever been a rugby team that has been so planned around one 4-year campaign as this lot. I mean, he says it all the time, doesn't he? This is all about 2019, and he'll tell you what day the final is, and it's engraved on his mind, etc., etc. And that's why he's done it. He's made decisions on people already.
Well, fine, but it's a good job that actually they've got a really weak fixture list in the autumn, and that generally the world of rugby, apart from the Lions and New Zealand, is rubbish. So Australia can be beat by my grandmother. South Africa are struggling, and the Six Nations undercard is rubbish as well. So. It's a great time to field your third team, I have to admit.
It's kind of traditional in sport to talk about how the season's going to unfold before it even starts, but we've decided to do it slightly differently and do it one weekend in here. There were 50 tries in the six games over the weekend. A lot of excitement. How much does this reflect the changing nature of the game? New Zealand have conceded 9 tries themselves in the last 2 internationals against the Australian team that Steve was just so complimentary about. Just generally, before we talk about each particular club, what do you think, guys, about that? Was it just a one-off in the sun with some slightly adapted rule changes, or has the game started to lurch in a slightly more super rugby direction?
Well, I think the new laws have probably got something to do with it, as has the sun and the sort of firm grounds. There's some pretty poor defence at the weekend as well. Maybe that's just lack of organisation, playing rubbish teams in pre-season or whatever, I don't know, but I found myself pining for a good old-fashioned 3-0, to be honest.
I think the mark was laid last season. The success that Wasps had, that Exeter had in playing kind of a style of rugby based on going out there to score tries rather than stop them, I think that has filtered through to other teams. I think the way that Leicester are trying to set up, and they've got that back line, obviously it didn't quite fire at the weekend, but Bath did. I think that just the way that those two teams found some success last season in playing attacking rugby is rubbing off on some of the other teams. The conditions obviously helped. The lack of defensive organisation certainly helped, and the laws have made a difference. It's easier for the attacking team to retain quick ball. It's harder for the tackler to slow it down. Harder to disrupt it at the breakdown And the scrum is less of a contest now, makes it much easier for the team with the ball. So
it's one hell of a statement from Leicester, isn't it, to so clearly redesign the way they want to play the game after years of having the Leicester way.
I don't think they are.
I
don't think they should. I mean, look, they've got a great set of backs now. They're all available again. I think Timur will eventually make a difference, but it looked to me, Owen, as if they still were caught between about six stools when they played on against Bath on Sunday. This thing about the way to play. First of all, I enjoyed the weekend's rugby very much. Very, very worried about it though, because at some stage you've got to go take the ball into a driving maul. You've got to have a good scrummage. If you don't need either of those anymore, then you're really on the verge of Super Rugby basketball, and too much of it was like that. And Wasps, you know, fair enough, if Wasps are going to score eight tries and concede six every week, it's going to be very exciting, but in the end they're not going to win anything. Some of the defending was rank, it was awful. And I just slightly, let's see how it goes when it starts pouring with rain, but I was really happy with the spectacle, not so happy, like Adam said, not so happy deep inside about what was happening with the game on Saturday and Sunday and Friday.
I think as the season goes on, that, you know, conditions will change, the driving mauls and that element of the game will have to come in, and teams will have to rely on that. What I'm really interested in is, as you just mentioned there, teams with strong scrums. Well, you almost don't need one anymore, because you can feed the ball straight into your hooker, who can, and then your number 8 can pick it up from the feet of the second row. It's not far off a rugby league style restart, rather than it's basically not a competition for the ball.
Absolutely, Arthur. Totally agree. And everything they do to try and make it more of a contest, it becomes less of a contest.
Yeah. Mm.
Totally agree. And you know, you might as well have a joke rugby league scrum where people just bend their heads and then they all wander off. You and I could have scrummaged. Oh, sorry, you could have scrummaged. Well, you could have scrummaged on the weekend in any of those scrums.
Yeah.
Does that mean that tight head props will no longer be the big dog earners in the squad?
Oh, almost certainly.
Yeah.
And the only reason you need one is if you have seven namby pamby forwards, so you need one to keep the scrum there. But apart from that, you know, you can forget it. So look, let's not be too down. I am up for the season. No, I was only joking when I said I wasn't, but. Let's see how it goes, because let's hope that New Zealand haven't dictated the way everyone should play. And let's be fair, we should have learned a lesson, because Warren Gatland and the Lions found another way to play. They found a way to shut New Zealand down. So it is not all basketball rugby. There's another different ways to do it, and long may they thrive.
Just the thing that confused me, or I think they might have got wrong slightly on the on the scrum laws, and tell me if I've misinterpreted this, Alex, because that's obviously your speciality. in previous seasons, the sides with a really good scrum would hold the ball in there and effectively take the legs and the energy out of the opposition with a long scrum. And my understanding is that they're discouraging that now, because they want you to play the ball quicker.
Yeah, that's right. So the team, the hooker. Well, actually, any member of the front row, but realistically, the hooker now has to hook the ball.
Yeah, they can all hook it.
So they can't. What you can't now do is feed the ball into the tunnel, and drive the opposition back over it, and then either scrum for a penalty or drive them back so that the ball then is at your number 8's feet and you can play off that. You now have to hook the ball back, and there were times over the weekend where the ball's hooked back was at the feet of the second row, and you could hear the referee instructing the number 8 to use it.
So does their number 8 actually have... I mean, I know that number 8 can now use it, which in times when your scrum's going slightly backwards, you think, well, that's a good form of escape. Faletau had to do that a bit in the Lions, didn't he?
Yeah, they don't have to, but there's obviously an encouragement to... If the ball is a bit stuck, or if you're not clearly driving forward, I think the referees are encouraging the number 8s to dig in there and get it out and get the game moving, which... As we were just saying, well, basically discourages. You can no longer just leave the ball in the tunnel and drive over. So therefore, you don't need necessarily a dominant forward pack, and you can't, unless the ball's at the number 8's feet and you're driving forward. Well, then it seems like the referee wants you to.
Yet again, Owen, it's the law of unintended consequences. Whenever rugby passes a law, it always has the opposite effect. Now, Alex is quite right. What they didn't want is the ball just stuck there between the two front rows and no one playing it. And the ball, it was like a joke. The ball was in there for ages. But you can still legally get the ball to the back of the scrum and drive it. And the referees are now hurrying people along saying, play the ball, play the ball. You don't have to if it's at the number 8's feet. Then it can be there for 2 hours if you want it to be. There's no law against it whatsoever.
But maybe it's because I'm played in that position. But there were times last season when you had two really good packs. The ball was sitting in the tunnel, and I found that 20 seconds thrilling, like compelling.
I completely agree.
Yeah, the tension of, you know, what is, yeah, how is this going? Who's going to win?
One of them's going to go, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I love that, and you know, you wasted so much time on scrum resets, etc. But actually, that 20 seconds can be some of the most thrilling, because you just don't know what's going to happen.
Yep.
And you understand the forces and the pressure and the stress and the strain that those players are going through to nudge the other one back a couple of inches to get the momentum and win that ball, and to remove that is a shame, particularly as it then, as you said, Jonesy, unintended consequences means we just end up feeding it almost straight to the number eight now.
Hmm. Well, let's just agree that we, as the Ruck, will be keeping a very, very firm eye on this over the next few weeks. But it's something we'll have to watch closely, because I think it's very, very important indeed. Listen, I did a really really good intro earlier, which it didn't really quite hit for six, because I thought it went all right, but what I did was I introduced Alex hitting the RFU for six. We didn't actually talk about what he did. So the big result of that hasn't really been publicised yet is a cricket match yesterday between the RFU and the Rugby Writers, and for the first time in history?
I think it's certainly the first time since I've played in it.
First time in a long time. In the lifetime of any of your greyhounds, Hathers.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, for the first time the Rugby Writers won, and we thought convincingly, and one of the... one of the many highlights was Alex hitting Paul Gustard's bowling for six. How many runs, Alex? And
wow!
And how many awards did you win?
I only got 29 because we were retiring on 30, and I was under orders to hit my last one for six, and I was caught on the boundary. But I'd hit a few others. It's a kind of great pleasure in creaming the best of the RFU into the pavilion at the Richmond Cricket Club.
Jonesy, your bowling was very highly
and
reviewed.
And his fielding.
No?
Oh. One-handed diving.
Oh, he's got his head in his hands now.
I had a nightmare, lads. I was carted round the field.
Alex, I actually missed his overs. Is he just being modest here?
He's been
no, he was on the money from ball one.
The umpiring was shocking, though. Sorry, Hathers. The other good thing was, after the game, in true fashion, we were fairly friendly with...
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
How would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast, now available on the Times radio app.
The RFU during the game, but after the game, in the post-match period, none of us spoke to any of the opposition, and none of the opposition spoke to us. So I think that we kept the honours were even off the field.
If I'm sounding a bit croaky today, my reward for my innings was to down a pint, which was spiked with chili vodka. So I got half. There's a video. I got halfway down it, and suddenly my face nearly exploded.
Right.
So that's why I'm here with coffee, Coke and all other, everything else to keep me going.
Sweat running down your brow. Okay, part two of the Ruck. We're going to talk about the new season, who we think is going to win, who's going to struggle, who's going to improve, who's brought in the best new players, how is George Ford going to transform that Leicester back line, etc, etc. We're going to go from the top. Alex is going to take us through his predictions. Interesting, I think we discussed this just now, and as we do, we all sort of had our rough predictions, and some went in the papers before the season actually started. One weekend in, you're kind of totally befuddled in some parts of the league with certain teams making a real impression and others not. Alex, go from the top and see if you really surprise us.
Do we go one by one, or shall
let's just start with.
Saracens to finish top and win the title at Twickenham. It's a fairly obvious prediction, but
it's a season over. Is anyone going to disagree?
No, they had what, 6 or 7 players out.
Yeah.
They came as if they were already at sort of spring intensity, whereas Northampton tried to ease their way into the season. I thought Sarries were marvellous. I thought Barrington and Cock up front were sensational, and whatever double sensational is, Shelt Brits was that.
Yeah, I've been to Saracens a couple of times in pre-season, and they are still absolutely spewing about losing the Premiership last year. That match in against Exeter, which they lost in the last minute, and there seems to be a real determination to put it right and probably win Europe as well.
We said last season, I don't think they would fear being away in a semi-final, but as you say, they don't. It's a statement.
Yeah, exactly. You
know, they want to dominate the season. They want to be the
Do you think that the way they'll do it differently this year is to ensure that they don't struggle for first and second, pick up more bonus points? That was their problem, wasn't it? They had to beat Wasps in the last regular game of the season, and they just played in the European final, etc., etc. So it's just slightly timed it wrong. If they got one more win or a couple more bonus points in the bag before that, then they'd have had the home semi-final, and who knows?
Yeah, well, definitely. And you talk about recruitment, they've recruited in the way that Saracens have done brilliantly in recent years. They've just added high quality depth to their squad. You know, players who've lost their way, sort of like Callum Clark, kind of 2 years out of the game.
Yeah,
he's a quality addition, and so they've got a greater depth. They'll lose players to internationals, but they've got a greater depth to get those bonus points and get those wins, Slotty, that you talked about to secure that top two finish, and I'm sure they'll finish top.
That's what cost them last year. Is during the when their big guns were away with England, they had poor results against Worcester and Gloucester, and that's what counted against them. But I think as Arthur says, they've recruited the sort of second tier of players very well this summer, so that when the big guns are away, they can probably cope with it a bit better.
Alex, have you got them too?
Well,
I think that's interesting.
I've got my top five is the same as before the first round.
Go on then, run through that then.
Well, I went for Saracens, Wasps, Leicester, Exeter, Bath. The way Bath played makes me wonder whether they might finish higher than fifth, as I had them. I think they've certainly mounted a real strong case to get in the top four. But I had Wasps, Leicester, Exeter, Bath. I think Leicester, who finished fourth last year, will certainly improve on that, despite what we saw on the weekend. Wasps, as Jonesy said, they score tries, they do concede them, but I think they will kick on a bit as well. So, yeah, that's the top five. The order, I think, I'd be open to debate, but I think I can't see anyone else getting in the top five.
I read on a paper on Monday morning criticism of Bath that said they were I can't remember the paper now, but criticism of Bath or the journalist.
We all know where this is going.
Oh,
carry
right, okay.
on, Steve.
I read in the Times they were really lucky, fortuitous, and good old Leicester most grossly hard done by, etc. I thought Bath were full value actually. I thought they were horrendously badly done by with the yellow cards, but let's not get there. But I thought their pack were better conclusively. And don't forget, they were held up over the line 3 times, and then Anthony Watson was almost clear but couldn't quite grab the ball. So I thought Bath were vastly impressive, and they've gone up from 7th to 5th in my team, in my final rankings. I thought they were excellent.
The newspaper in question was the Times, and the journalist was me.
Oh, so it was. Yeah.
Forgot to finish that off. I thought Bath that they made so many mistakes in that first half, and then the game changed in a really rapid period of 8 minutes when Leicester conceded those 3 tries. From that point, Bath were able to defend it, and I thought the Bath defence. When I reread my match report, I would concede that I didn't pay enough justice to the Bath defence, or that their defence was very good. I don't think Leicester were particularly good either. I just thought it looked like an opening day of the season where both teams potentially. I've actually got Leicester still in fifth, but I could so easily be wrong on that. I think both teams could do really, really well. Either team could actually win it. It was the first game of the season when they were making a lot of errors.
I think there are, for me, you can divide the league into 3 chunks. So in one sense, it's not that competitive, because I can't see any other clubs breaking into that top five. But I think the jostling for position in that top five could be really interesting. I think the middle chunk of teams is the same. You could have from 6th down to 10th. I've got at the moment, I've noted down Gloucester, Northampton, Newcastle, Harlequin, Sale. But then as I read it, I think, well, that's a bit harsh on Sale, because I think they'll improve. I think they've recruited really well. Newcastle, they played Worcester, who I think are in all sorts of difficulties, but I could certainly see them finishing higher, you know, sixth or seventh, definitely. Northampton, if they carry on playing the way they did at Twickenham, they'll be struggling all year. So I think there's that middle chunk is a really hard one to predict, because it will be, you know, if Gloucester can carry on playing the way they played in that opening game, the quality wasn't the greatest. It felt like a quality wise, felt like an opening round of the season, and yet the drama and the spirit and the grit and the fight that Gloucester showed, the kind of tough underbelly which they haven't had before, would suggest they're really on the right.
I tell you what, I need to see more, because Gloucester, I just do not see Gloucester winning away at Sarries, Leicester, Exeter, Wasps, Bath, Sale, Newcastle. I think it was a great win, but I would take a lot of persuading it's going to be more than one off. Having said that, I mean, I think Sale have recruited well, and I'd really like to see them do well. And I think that when that Diamond gets them together, I think they're a good contender. So I've got Sale finishing above Gloucester.
Jonesy, who have you got in sixth then?
Sale. I've got Sale, and I've got Newcastle up there as well. I've got Gloucester and Quinns beneath them.
And Northampton?
Between Sale and Newcastle, actually.
Right.
I got Northampton about sixth, something like that. I mean, they cannot be ever as bad again, surely, as they were on Saturday. Jack?
Well, I've got... I think the battle for sixth and the final European spot might even be more interesting than what's going on at the top if Sarries keep going like they are. I've actually got Newcastle at sixth. I think they've recruited well.
And they don't lose players.
They don't lose players. Mark Wilson was probably the nicest bloke on tour in Argentina. What a great tourist he was. I think they'll have a real crack this year. They've got Toby Flood back. They've got Mare Mouzin, the French centre, so I think they can have a go.
I think it'd be great for the Premiership if Gloucester could actually grasp the nettle and become a force. Yeah. But I think it might be even better for the league if Newcastle and Sale were to be up there finishing sixth and seventh and challenging, because they're two teams that have a huge catchment area for the game if they can build a force. And I think Newcastle are starting to do that. I think that's one of the things that really attracted Toby Flood to go back there.
Yeah.
He had offers to go elsewhere. He could have stayed two more years in Toulouse. But he could see, it wasn't a nostalgic move. He could see what Dean Richards is building there. I think he'll be a big player for them. I think it'd be great for the league if there was a real big foothold in the north, Newcastle and Sale.
Do you know what? I agree with you about Sale, but if you got extra points for providing players for other clubs, Sale and Newcastle will be topping all the time. And the key to them is maybe not so much winning it, but keeping their players. And I totally agree. Geographical spread is lovely. I got the massive admiration for Newcastle and Sale, because they've got none of the advantages of some of these other teams. And, you know, it's relatively easy being Gloucester, Exeter and Leicester, if you know what I mean. But it's difficult being Sale and Newcastle. And I'd love to see them up there, really would. But also, you know, at a time when we're talking about the Pro 12, Pro 14 mucking around with, or not mucking around, but bringing in South Africans and Super Rugby falling to bits, let's be fair, we're very, very lucky to be covering this league, because I still think anyone at the bottom could beat anyone at the top when playing at home. It is incredibly competitive, and fair play, you know, we are so lucky to be covering the Aviva Premiership. We really are.
I think on the sort of development of a transfer system is a whole other subject, but one of the things that the Sale are doing to guard against losing players is giving them 5-year contracts. Now, they're not, I believe they're sort of 3 years with an extra year, because if you're Tom Curry and you sign a 5-year deal, you want to make sure that in 5 years' time, when you've earned 30 caps for England, you're being paid the market rate. So there are the kind of, it's a staggered contract, but the point is that if a big spending Bristol want to come in and get Tom Curry, they're going to have to spend a lot of money to get him out of Sale. And that's one of the ways that they're now trying to build their club, based around a really exciting group of young players.
But it's also a pledge, to those players. It's going to be worth you staying, yeah. because there's a promise of what's yet to come.
Yeah, and it's a pledge to the fans that this is what you're going to buy into. If you come and buy a season ticket for the next 5 years, you will see Sam James, Tom Curry,
yep.
Ben Curry, they're going to be here.
I sort of think with Sale, because they obviously are kind of relaunching with their new owner, Simon Orange, maybe they're one season away from getting there. Two more decent additions. I mean, they'll have more time to recruit for next season. So I think next season they might be really good. But they're certainly can compete. I wouldn't be I agree with you, they won't get into top five. They could certainly get six. But one team we haven't really mentioned is a team that had two Lions props, a lot of international players, haven't really hit the straps for 4 or 5 seasons. Is Quins? Does anyone see Quins getting out of their sort of seasonal underperformance?
No. I mean, if you look at the list of the people they've brought in, with the greatest respect to them, none of them really jump out and hit you between the eyes. So I can see Quins really struggling. I've got them down at 10th.
10th?
Yeah.
I'll enjoy that. Anyone disagree?
I wouldn't disagree with that, no.
I couldn't disagree with that because I have to go there the next few weeks. But I don't think they're going to be contenders. I really don't. I think that the sort of Danny Kerr, Nick Easter access they've now lost, very important to them. And one or two of the signings not worked out. Obviously, you've got a new fly half to come in, two new fly halves to come in. I think we can read too much into the London Irish. I mean, God bless London Irish, it was brilliant. I think we can read too much into that game. But I don't see Quins. I think Quins will be, it'll be flat out to get anywhere near Europe, leave alone the top four.
Yeah. Do you think that Quins are, I'm sure you're going to disagree with this, Josie, but are Quins slightly where Northampton were, a good team that where the management is not quite clicking anymore? I think that's what my view of Quins is the management isn't quite wrong, the top of the coaching.
It's hard to say. I mean, the thing is, when Conor O'Shea was an absolutely messianic figure there, and it's no criticism of the others to say that, you know, they miss him, and I think they do for the focus and all that. John Kingston is obviously an excellent coach, but different sort of figure. Sometimes you need a ranter and a raver, you know, stuck in there and looking in the eye and challenging you and challenging the media and the fans and everything and staring mad-eyed at the camera on television. I think you need that in some clubs, you know. That's why Bath have Tabai Matson to counteract Todd Blackadder, you know, and that's why Richard Cockerell will always be a decent, apart from his coaching. You need a big figure, and I think somewhere the ranter and the raver's gone from Quins.
Okay, we'll look at the bottom. What's your view of the bottom of the Premiership, Alex?
Well, before round one, I had Worcester bottom, London Irish to survive, and I haven't changed my mind.
You wouldn't change your mind after the first weekend, would
definitely
you?
Not. I just think Worcester are in a. They've got, you know, the club's up for sale. They're certainly desperate for investment at the very least. Their big player Ben Teo has been injured. I'm not sure how. Interested he is in Worcester, if I'm honest. He came over to play for England.
There's a lot of talk of Ben Teo moving, isn't there, almost every week?
Bath are dead keen. Hugard's a massive player for them, but he doesn't arrive till halfway through the season. I think the club's in a real difficult position. And London Irish, on the other hand, have come up with some momentum, which doesn't earn you anything in the Premiership, but I thought they started really well, and they have a host of very experienced internationals to blend into that team. Some stardust out wide. They've reinforced their pack, which is a must in the Premiership. And I just feel that they will have a stronger squad than Worcester by the time all their new arrivals blend into that team.
Start of the season, I had London Irish to go down and Worcester to survive. And I think I got that epically wrong.
Yeah, I in my newspaper on last Friday, I think I definitely had London Irish to go down and Worcester to survive. I got that wrong as well. And also on the Teo thing, we were at Worcester at the end of last season where they had quite a good game, and the Worcester fans were muttering that it was about time that he turned it in for them. And there's this other distraction of him possibly moving. I can just see them going into
About distraction. You want a barometer for rugby? A barometer for rugby is, unless it's going to go down the soccer route, which is shocking, Ben Teo was rescued. He gave up playing for Ireland and he wanted to come somewhere else. Worcester signed him. Ben Teo should stick with Worcester till the last day of his contract. If he doesn't, it says something really bad about rugby. We're going down the route of Kyle Walker and all those guys. Not that I'm bitter about him, Judas. Ben Teo, there's people like Sonny Bill Williams. Oh, so I'm off for another contract now. Oh, I might go back to league. My agent, I might go to American football. I might go to badminton. Ben Teal should stay at Worcester, earn his money and play like an international player. Bath should leave him there, and when his contract ends, then he can go somewhere else.
OK, thanks, boys. We're going to have to wrap it up there. Join us on The Ruck. You can get us on iTunes. You can join the conversation with your opinions. Look forward to seeing you again.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on. Settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books. Contacts. Calendar. Double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.